Hare Krishna, our very great fortune to hear His Grace Atul Krishna Prabhu on Bhagavad Gita, starting from chapter 3rd, and it's a unit 1 of Bhakti Shastri in Sridham Mayapur, and this is the day 1 of the class on 16th of December 2013. Hare Krishna.
Refreshed after our short break last week? Refreshed?
Yes.
You were able to do a little bit of reading for from chapters 3 to 6? Good. Who's read chapter 3 already? Good. Okay.
Not the whole thing.
Okay. Well, today we're going to cover most of chapter 3.
So you can see that we have a strategy. We have a strategy for this unit or this section
of the Bhakti Shastri course.
In Nectar of Devotion, we had a lot of classes, morning and afternoon. Pretty much your whole day was filled up with class time. Now our strategy for this session is to have less class time to give you more time to comfortably cover the required reading for the section, chapter 3 to 6. So already, if most of you have completed chapter 3, that's fine. That means within a day or two you can do chapter 4 and chapter 5. Chapter 6 is probably the longest, and if you can get that done by Thursday, then you'll be well and truly comfortably progressing in terms of covering the necessary reading. Now, the reason why we're doing that is because actually this particular section of the Gita, there is a lot of information, particularly in chapters 4 and 5, that is not as relevant to us as other sections of the Gita. Not that it's not important, or that it's not transcendental, but it's not as relevant to us as other sections of the Gita, which is dealing more with sadhana and bhakti, etc. I will explain that in this presentation. And chapter 4 and chapter 5 are actually dealing with impersonalism and jnana and jnani. So a few things we'll look at, but we won't necessarily go through everything, because you can do that on your own time, and we're not going to discuss everything, so you can just read in your own time. If you have any questions on any of the chronological verses, then you can ask them in the class. But we won't go verse by verse as you would have done in the first couple of chapters. Right? We'll be selecting specific sections that are particularly relevant for us and discussing them, and the general chronological reading you can just do in your own time. And the reason why we do that is because that way, as a curriculum, we can spend more time on those things which are more relevant. And not that we're kind of obliged to give equal time to everything. We don't have to do that. In this way we select what's more relevant for us, we'll spend more time on that. And in that way we can, that's called a course. You know, we're actually going and selecting things and we're moving in a particular plan. And so we'll cover these topics, as you can see, over the four lessons. You could describe them as a conceptual study. A conceptual study. We'll be looking at the concepts as they develop, the concepts of the different yoga systems conceptually. We'll be looking at those over the subsequent classes. So today we'll be looking at the beginning concepts, and we will look at chapters 5 and 6 also, some aspects today. But we'll be looking at the fundamental concepts of the yoga systems.
as to yoga systems, and then tomorrow we'll be looking at how they connect to each other. So we're looking at it from a conceptual point of view rather than a chronological point of view. And you know, regarding that approach, you can see how you find it at the end of the session and see, you know, what your experience was. And we'll give you opportunity to share that with us at that time. So let's have a little bit of a review of the second chapter. Now you remember that Arjuna had these reasons for hesitating to fight. And you should know those reasons. So what are those reasons? Arjuna had reasons or arguments that he posed to Krishna why he was refusing to fight yesterday.
He wouldn't enjoy the kingdom.
Okay, that's one. He wouldn't enjoy the kingdom.
Compassion.
Ruchi.
Compassion.
Compassion. Anandamohan.
Destruction.
Of destruction of?
The killing and destroying the whole.
The family. And one more? Indecision is kind of like everything combined together. Yeah.
And one
simple reaction. Yeah, okay. Now, what actually happens, and you may have discussed this in your classes on chapters 1 and 2, but what actually happens is that Bhagavad Gita is working on multi-dimensions, a multi-dimensional discourse. Uh-huh. And actually, in the end of the Gita, there's a verse, the 18th chapter, where Krishna says, Samvadam Dharanyam. And Prabhupada translates that as conversation with, what does Prabhupada call that? I forget Prabhupada's translation. Samvadam Dharanyam.
Is that the one with
transcendental discussion?
What he uses in worship,
divine. Yeah, that's it.
That's like, conversation. Damyam Sambadam. Yes, sacred conversation.
Which conversation? Sacred conversation. Sacred conversation.
Yeah.
So that word Sambadam Dharmyam, it means a complete discussion about Dharma. Vadam means, you know, Vacha Begum, Vadam. Vadam means describing, speaking. Sambadam means complete description. Sambadam Dharmyam. So, sacred conversation, or you could say, complete analysis of Dharma. And that's Krishna's purpose when he's speaking Bhagavad Gita, because it's the official policy of Bhagavan. Dharma samstarpanakaya. He comes to establish the policies, the principles. And that's why bhakti is actually it's a little bit hidden in Gita as Krishna speaks to Arjuna. It's a little bit hidden. And Krishna, you know, he gives equal time. In fact, he gives more time to the other yoga systems than he does to bhakti. Because that's his responsibility. When he's speaking to the world, he's got to cover everything. So in other words, Arjuna's, you could say, doubts were the, you could say, the trigger or the medium by which Krishna is able to present all of these different principles in responding to Arjuna's questions. Therefore, Arjuna is put into Maya. We were discussing that in the first. Arjuna is put into Maya by Krishna's will, so that Krishna can explain everything. So, you know, the first couple of chapters, the first chapter, okay, you were looking at Arjuna Visharad Yoga, it's Arjuna's lamentation. And then the second chapter is like an overview. It's called Bhagavad Gita. What's it called? Overview of the content. Contents of the Gita summarized. Right? So you could say in the second chapter, Krishna quickly answers everything. And let's have a look. And answers everything means he defeats Arjuna's arguments or responds to them. So Arjuna is asking the question, it's the medium whereby Krishna can teach humanity all of these different principles. So let's have a look how that works in the second chapter. So Arjuna's argument about compassion is there. And then Krishna, he explains, in response to that, he explains all this about jnana, the difference between matter and spirit. And application of that is called jnana yoga. Krishna doesn't get so much into yoga in that section, but he talks about the jnana, but applying that it will be called jnana yoga. And we'll look at that today, later in this presentation. Sometimes, the second chapter, in previous editions, it was called Sankhya Yoga. And in the Sanskrit, it's called Sankhya Yoga. That's referring to this section. That's because this section is in there, Sankhya. Sankhya means analysis, means identifying what's temporary, what's not temporary. So that's all there. So therefore, your compassion is minimized. The idea of compassion is minimized because it's based upon the ogyan. Yes.
So jnana and sankhya yoga is the same?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is. Okay, any question on that?
Buddha yoga?
Yeah, coming. Good. Okay, then. Okay, we're going to work together so we can explain. So Arjuna talks about enjoyment. And then Krishna, he explains, well, if you really want, what does Krishna say? In the second chapter, we study. Arjuna is saying, there'll be no enjoyment for me. What's Krishna say? Yeah. Okay, so he says, if you fight, you'll enjoy. Arjuna says, if I fight, I won't enjoy because I'll kill all my family. And Krishna says, no, if you fight, you will enjoy, because either you win, that's enjoyment, or you will be defeated, and you go to the heavenly planets and enjoy heavenly pleasure. Swagam dvanam apavritam. The doors of heaven will be open for you. And he goes on to further say that, in this section of verses, that if you don't fight, what will happen? If you don't fight... Yeah, no, in this section, what does Krishna say? Michael? Yes. Yeah, reputation. You'll be criticized. And what does Krishna say? For one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death. In other words, if you're talking about enjoyment, then you better fight. And because you'll either win and enjoy, or you'll die and enjoy, and if you don't fight, you'll be ridiculed, and that won't be enjoyment for you. So Krishna, he's actually defeated the whole idea of enjoyment. He's pinned Arjuna. You want to enjoy, then you better fight. And those instructions, they're not exactly, although they're spoken by Krishna, they are in on the realm of, would you call it yoga? All this, you know, you'll die, you'll go to heaven, you'll win the kingdom. If you don't, you'll be ridiculed. What level is Krishna referring to? Or what level is Krishna addressing? Material. It's karma, kanda. It's how to be happy in this world. But Krishna doesn't stay on that very long. He spends a few verses on that, and quickly, around about text 40, 41, he minimizes that. Trigunna Vishayavad, and this Trigunna Bhava Arjuna. The Vedas deal with mature modes of nature, and this Trigunna, but you should get on beyond that platform. Get off that platform of material consideration. Nidvandva Netta Sattva Sto. Nitva Shattva Sto. You should come to the spiritual platform. But Krishna gets onto that pretty quickly. He doesn't stay here very long. But as we mentioned, because it's Dharmyam Samvadam, Krishna has to explain this in the Bhagavad Gita. Because otherwise it would not be Samvadam. It would be something like other books. It would be like Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is specifically for bhakti. Okay? So that's there, but it's not emphasized. And then Krishna goes on to talk a little bit about he progresses in the subsequent section. And you asked, Prabhu, your name?
Sir?
Your name?
Prabhu.
Prabhu,
Prabhu.
Yes. Coming back.
Pavitra. Pavitra. Yatra Puri Yoga. So Puri Yoga, for the purpose of our study, if you consider Buddhi Yoga as Karana Yoga, that will be convenient for you. For the purpose of our study. Because in this section of the Gita, it leads up to chapter 6, Buddhi Yoga and Karma Yoga mean the same thing. But later in the Gita, in the 10th chapter, Buddhi Yoga becomes a little different, and again in the end, Buddhi Yoga becomes a little more progressive. But here, it just means Karma Yoga. Now, we'll be exploring today, and tomorrow, we'll be exploring what's the difference between Karma Kanda and Karma Yoga. We'll be exploring this in full. Can anyone explain to us now? If you already know, we don't need to spend so much time exploring. The difference is here, yes.
I said that Karma and Yoga is to do your duty without attachment to what you do that is not
Yeah, very good, that's it. So the karma is the same. It's the same. In this case, Arjuna is fighting. So if he's fighting in order to get material prosperity in his life or even next, that's karma kanda. Karma kanda means path. So it's the path of religious duties. That if I do, I'll get prosperity. And, as we'll be exploring a little more today, Krishna goes on, we'll be looking at examples, some detailed verses from here, further clarifying. But Krishna is explaining to Arjuna, no, better than that is that you do your duty. And by the way, what is that karma? What is it? What does that mean? That karma, another name for karma is? Yeah, but what type of activities?
Authorized
activities. If it's not authorized, what's it called?
Karma.
Yeah. So whenever the word karma is mentioned, that means vanasram dharma. That is swakarma. That is what that means. I mean, prescribed duties means according to your vana and ashram. And that's all explained in different sections of the Gita. What is the Brahma Karma? Who can tell us? What is the Brahma Karma?
Brahma Karma.
Yes, Narayan Rishi. That's it. Jnanam Vijnanam. Brahma Karma. Yeah, Brahma Karma. So that for a Brahmana it's there. You have to rise early, you have to be clean, you have to control your mind, you have to control your senses, you have to be simple, you have to be honest. That's Brahma Karma. And Kshatriya karma, around the same section of the Gita, Sauryam, Pavitra.
Heroism.
Sauryam. Tejas. Jiddhi daksham, Juddhi chapayapalayanam. Courage in battle, resourcefulness. Resourcefulness, daksha. Vritti upava, the courage, determination. Dhanam, charity. Ishvara bhav, leadership. To lead others, to organize others. Kshatra karma svabhavajam. This is karma for a kshatra. This is 18th chapter text number 42. There in Gita. And then Vaishya karma. Krishi Gauraksha Vanijam. Krishi means farming, Gauraksha, cow protection. Vanijam, trade. And Sudrashapi svabhavajam, service to the others. So that's what's meant by karma. That's karma in Gita. So if you do karma kanda, that means you do all that and you get prosperity. You get punya. But Krishna doesn't, you know, all the Vedas deal with that. Traigunna Vishaya Veda. All the Vedas deal with that, the Vedas. So Krishna doesn't really go into it here much in Gita. But he touches on it. He discusses more about Karma Yoga. In other words, you carry on with the same prescribed duties and you do it without the desire to get results. You just do it out of duty.
And why does, I think you would have discussed at the end of the second chapter, there's a whole stack of verses around here, 38, all the way up here. Why Krishna of the two? Tayas tu karma sannyasa karma yoga vishishite. In the fifth chapter, Krishna says, of the two, karma yoga is superior to karma sannyas. Why does he say that? Why does Krishna prefer karma yoga? Karma sannyas means that you give up your karma and you just remain at this level. You remain here. It's all temporary. Why do anything? It's just entanglement. Whatever I do is going to result, is going to be, it's temporary, so don't do anything. So it's called karma sannyas, which is chapter 4. Yeah, it'll come up, chapter 4 and 5. We'll describe this. Karma sannyas. So why does Krishna recommend karma yoga over karma sannyas?
Doesn't Krishna say the man who lights no fire for stones will work, humanity happens in this world, tomorrow, in the next?
Kind of, he says a few things there, you've kind of merged them all together. That's the sixth chapter, that one, that the real sannyas is anastrita karana phalam. You work without attachment. Yeah, that's sixth chapter. But it just says, yes, Prabhu. That's in the beginning of the third chapter we'll look at. Yeah. Can't not do anything. That's true. Very good. And we will look at that tomorrow when we're looking at shortcomings of Jnana Yoga. And also there's another reason, which we'll discuss today actually. Both of them, yeah. But why? Both of them, karma sannyas and karma yoga, no karma, either one. But why does Krishna recommend karma yoga? Maybe we'll... Yes? That's probably more like on that level. We'll discuss today. We'll discuss pretty shortly. And then the last reason... that's a mistake. That shouldn't be there. Oh yes it is. Should be there. Again, karma kanda is discussed, which we will discuss tomorrow. These verses here. And then, okay, so we're kind of giving an overview here of chapters 2 and 3. And how they relate to these arguments. And then, this destruction of the dynasty argument that's discussed in this third chapter, which we haven't discussed in the class, and we'll discuss it today. And it explains, it also touches on the point why karma yoga is superior to karma sannyas. So, what we're showing here is we're showing an overview of Krishna's immediate or initial responses to Arjuna's arguments and how he's kind of progressively responded throughout the second chapter. And now, from here on, we'll see a more detailed description given. Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, Karma Sannyas Yoga, Chapter 4, Dhyana Yoga, Chapter 6. We'll see these described in more detail. And we will begin to explain all this today. Any question? Not exactly. In this connection, in this area, Krishna is not talking about bhakti. He's talking about karma yoga. And he's referring to it as buddhi yoga and karma yoga. He's not talking about bhakti.
But like, in second chapter, it's defined buddhi yoga as devotional service.
In the purports, yes. Yeah, because Prabhupada is explaining that if you do bhakti, then automatically you're doing karma yoga. So therefore, in the purports, Prabhupada is just talking about bhakti. Because if you do bhakti, then you're doing all that, no problem. But in terms of Krishna's discussion with Arjuna, bhakti is not discussed until 7th chapter. So, for the study of the Gita, it's helpful for us to actually see what is actually going on in the discussion between Krishna and Arjuna. Although it's not so relevant for us in terms of application. This is theory. It's not relevant for us in terms of applying because already we're doing bhakti. Right? But we should understand what Krishna, the progression of Krishna's discussion from a theoretical point of view. Narayan Prabhu.
In response to your question about why Krishna prefers Kama Yoga,
that's
like 5-3. One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activity.
That's true. That's the answer, yeah. He's not attached and he's not detached. He's not averse to doing it. He's not averse to doing it. That's the answer, yeah.
Does it mean that Krishna actually supports it as
and tomorrow when we look at this, we will see how when you do it, you gradually become purified. When we look at that section of verses tomorrow, you'll see. Tomorrow we're going to be looking at how these different rungs of the yoga ladder fit together and how you gradually progress. So we'll see the role, that we'll see the function that Karmakanda plays tomorrow.
Somebody who performs
Karma Sannyas, reverse,
then.
Someone who performs
Karma Sannyas,
what?
Reverse, yeah.
Okay, let's take a look at this one now, the destruction of the dynasty argument. Now, at the end of this section here, Krishna is talking here about worshipping the demigods, in verses 10 to 16. And he's saying, actually, you have to worship the demigods, otherwise your life is sinful. Agaya Indriya Ramo. In text 16, you can see the verse. Agaya Indriya Ramo. 3:16, he says that a life of Indriya Ramo, a life of sense pleasure, is agaya, a sinful life. So you have to worship the demigods, otherwise you're sinful. 3:16. Then in 3:17, Krishna says that everyone has to worship the demigods except those who, what? No, somebody says in 3:17, says everyone has to worship the demigods except those who?
Satisfying themselves.
Yeah, they have no material desires. Those who have no material desires. Then you don't have any, you don't have to worship demigods. So let's look at what Krishna says in detail. Can read this. Someone can read for us. This is 18, text 18.
Someone can read.
When Arjuna Dharma is an example described in general, a self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in this charge and described duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work.
Okay, so a self-realized man. That's in text 17 described as Atmarati. Atmarati. In other words, as Narayana Prabhu said, he's Atmarati, he's self-satisfied. Satisfied knowing that he's not the body. Atmarati. As a self-realized man, he has no purpose to fulfill in discharge of prescribed duty. In other words, he doesn't need to do karma. He doesn't need to do karma because he's already liberated. And so he has no body conception that requires some treatment. Like one who is conditioned by mighty goodness, he requires Brahma-karma treatment. One who is conditioned by Rajaguna, he requires Kshatriya-karma as treatment. You'll get purified if you do those karmas. But if you're already self-realized, then you don't need to do karma. No need.
Is that why at the beginning of this chapter, Arjuna said now I'm more confused?
Yeah, because whenever Krishna is saying that, Arjuna thinks, then why are you asking me to fight? Yeah. But here, so Krishna says he has no need, has no purpose, he has no need to perform karma. And at the same time, there's no reason for him not to do it. Right? It's a little bit like there's Ayurvedic medicine called Rasayana. It's a tonic, you know, tonic. Tonic. So tonic is good for the diseased, and it's also good for the healthy. Although the healthy, they don't need to take tonic, but it's not harm in them taking it. So Arjuna doesn't need to perform the prescribed duties, but it's not going to harm him, there's no reason why he can't do it. And we'll take carries on. Can you read that?
Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work.
Alright. So that's you don't need to do it. You may not need to do it. But however, because everybody is going to be looking at your example, those who do need to do it should do it. And by looking at, by seeing your example, then they will also do it. So that's the reason why one reason why Krishna prefers Kama Yoga to Kama Sannyas, because Kama Sannyas is not for everybody, but Kama Yoga is for everybody. So even if you're qualified to do Kama Sannyas, better you do Kama Yoga, because you'll be setting an example for those who should be doing Kama Yoga, or who should be doing Kama Kanda. Either way, the example will be good. Either way. Because actually the motivation, whether you're doing it for a duty or whether you're doing it for attachment, that's not so visible. The point is you're doing with karma, and everyone will follow that. So. Can you read the translation, please?
As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to results, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path.
Fine. So it's the same activity. The ignorant, that's karma kanda, they're performing it because they want to get the result. But you perform it just for the sake of showing an example for them. And then Krishna gives himself as an example. Someone like to read the verse? We can chant it. It's a good, nice, important verse. Someone chant will respond.
Name Patashi Kartavyam.
Okay, so Na Kartavyam, I have no duty. Trishu Lokeshu, in the three worlds. I have no obligation to do any karma. Krishna's saying. Because nanavaptamavapti, I'm not in need of anything. Talk about Atnarati, he's everything. So he has no need. Vata evacha karmani, but still Krishna's doing karma. He's doing vanashram dharma, he's doing prescribed duties. Why is Krishna doing, what prescribed duties is Krishna doing? Who can tell us? Prescribed duties Krishna's doing?
He's being sacrificed.
Yep. In some places, can you remember some of the things he's doing?
Offering
cows in charity. What else? Yeah? What else?
He's playing with children.
Playing with children.
Treating the wise people.
Yeah. What else?
Eating their affairs in the same.
In some cases he's getting his daughters married. Arranging for husbands for his daughters and getting his sons married, arranging for battle strategies.
Rising early in the morning.
Grihastha Dharma. Grihastha Dharma. Kshatriya Dharma. Anyone who comes here, he will, you know, Krishna will, if some Brahmin comes, Krishna will go and protect him.
Or even in Vrindavan, all the Yashoda and the Gopis, they would chant mantras for his protection.
Yeah.
I heard, like, that's him in the palace. Doing like Kshatriya Dharma.
Yeah.
But he also appears in Vrindavan to show us also how to care for the cows.
Yeah. In Dwarka, Krishna marries 16,108. No, Krishna doesn't, Vibaha Yagya, it's called Vibaha Yagya. It's a purificatory sanskar. Krishna doesn't need to do that, he's a supreme personality, he's got it. Already everything's his property, he doesn't need to marry these girls. But he marries them, and even in some cases, Nagnajit says, you know, you have to wrestle the bulls and everything. Krishna can say, well, what are you? I'm their god. They don't take any bulls. No, because he's the shoshur, the father-in-law. He has to do what he says. Why? Because he's showing the example of a grihastha, of a kshatriya, of a king. But this is why he's doing it. He set example. Dana samskar pranataya. Part of his... Can read, please.
A love that rules and regulations are for the conditioned soul and not Lord Krishna, because he remembers to establish the principles of religion, he follows the prescribed rules. Otherwise, common men would follow his footsteps because he is the greatest authority.
So this verse is there. You can read the translation, someone, please.
I do not perform prescribed duties. All these roles would be put into relation. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population.
Now, does that sound familiar? Ring a bell?
Yes.
What did Krishna say? What did Arjuna say about that? About that? In the beginning?
Unwanted population.
Yeah, what did Arjuna say? Yeah, what about it? That's, yeah.
If he does that, he will be done.
If Arjuna said if he fights, it will be because of Vana Sankara. And what does Krishna say here? The opposite. He says if you don't fight, that will be the cause of Vana Sankara. Because everyone will see Arjuna's not doing his prescribed duties. I don't have to do my prescribed duties. And that's the end of the whole social Vana Sankara system. Right? So in that way, Krishna has countered all of Arjuna's arguments. Now I think that in the lesson, I was sitting in that lesson, and we were discussing Arjuna's arguments, and actually we were valuing his arguments as actually strong arguments, because if they were weak arguments, then it would show no credit to Krishna refuting them. They're strong arguments. The common people are more. So when you see that Krishna is far ahead of that. So basically we'll see this concept further developed in the Gita. The second chapter, everything is touched upon, and these concepts will be further developed. But these are the fundamental concepts. Kama Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. Now, this is a well-known verse. It appears in this section. Someone like to chant, please. We can respond. Someone like to read translation, please.
Whatever action any great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by, his own reacts, all the world responds.
Now in the purport, Prabhupada talks about the Acharya principle. I'd like to read that, please.
Lord Chaitanya said that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. One who teaches in that way is called Acharya, or the ideal teacher.
Now, all of you have come from different places, different environments, where you are acting to some degree or another as a leader. You may be a brahmacharya leader, you may be a department head, or you may be a manager in the temple, or you may have a party of preachers, or you may go to your place and preach to your family or other people, or whatever level. There's, we are in a position of influencing others in some way or another, or our family influencing, whatever. So take a few moments to reflect on an experience that you have had where somebody else followed your example. We don't mean what you're telling them to do. Not your instruction. Your behavior. They followed
the example of your behavior, the way you were acting, whatever it is. And what was the result that they got as a result of following your behavior? Spend any question? What, is it clear what it means? You've done. You act in a certain way. Others saw your the way you acted, and they did the same thing. What result did they get? Subhu? Yeah, that means we have a break?
No.
Oh, the time? Okay, just spend a... This is an individual exercise. Yeah, sorry, you did it in pairs. You just discuss with a partner, someone nearby you, an experience that, like that, that you've had recently. Take a few minutes to reflect and discuss that. Have everyone's undivided attention again. Would someone like to share with us their incident that they shared with their partner? Yes, Pavitra. What happened?
I was from Maroc. 2 days ago, I went to Ganga.
Went to?
Ganga.
Ganga?
Yeah. So I was about to swim.
Okay, so because you were ecstatically chanting the holy name and happy, they started imitating you and they became happy too, huh? Okay, good. So Pavitra, what does that tell us about the way we behave in relation to others? What is it? In general, what would you say, the way we behave? Yeah, okay, that's fine. And the example is good. Just what's the principle, what would you say about the way we behave and how does that affect others? What would you say?
Yeah, I was friendly with them.
Okay, that's what happened in that specific incident. Now I'm asking for, in general, give us a general principle. The way we behave, what effect does it have on others? What does it do to them? The way you behave? Yeah, that's what you did, but in general, what effect does that have on others? Whether it's nice or not, isn't it? But the way you behave?
I have a good example.
And what effect did that have on them?
It's comfortable. It's comfortable.
So the principle is that the way you behaved affected them. The way you behaved affected them. So how are you going to apply that principle in the future when you're going to the Ganga for Vitrabhubhu? The way you behave, people are going to be affected by. How are you going to apply that principle when you're going to the Ganga in the future? Okay, yeah, you'll behave properly. You'll behave in an appropriate way. That people will be benefited if they do the same. Anyone else like to share their experience? Mr. Ramadan?
I was going to say that every human being is, by design, an observer of people who lead by example. And I don't mean like meeting people, by example. I mean like how you might behave politely in public, how you might behave spiritually in public. People observe this. Even sick, demented, malicious karmis observe this. It has an effect upon the mind. And people think about that. That is leading by example.
Yeah.
Is how you profoundly can influence people in your own life, whether you're leading anyone or not.
Good. Any other incidents like to share with us? Someone like to share their experience? Yes, Michael. Oh, yes.
I was at a flea market in the Grahasha area.
Yeah, right.
He was doing a little sort of gender pen.
Yeah.
And he did a bit of rapping. And then Garanga Sima joined him afterwards.
Okay.
And he came out of his shell. And he was one of
okay, the so in general, Pavitra, Michael. Michael.
Yes.
The way you behave, what effect, how does that affect others?
Influences their attitude and behavior.
Okay, so how are you gonna apply that principle in the future when you go to the next time you go to the flea market?
Just be conscious that however I act, speak, think will have an effect on
them. Right. Very good. Okay. And the purport proper says this. Someone can read this.
The king of the executive head of a state, the father and the school teacher are all considered to be natural leaders of the innocent people in general. All such natural leaders have a great responsibility to their dependents.
Great responsibility. And the different places in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains how the king actually gets reactions. And all of these people that, you know, movie stars, celebrities, if they set a trend in humanity that everyone starts following, actually they get reactions from what the people who are following them do, because they're doing it following their example, but people don't know the subtle science. What to speak of, the, you know, a natural leader like a school teacher or a leader, if people follow your example and do good things, you get good reactions. If they follow your example, do bad things, you get bad reactions for it.
I had a question about how countries can have collective karma.
Yeah.
I've heard about the concept of that. Could you explain that a little?
Yeah, well, because if you're, let's say you're taking advantage of the national facilities, right? The roads, the government and all of these facilities they provide, so therefore you're actually, you know, you're somewhat implicated in the values that nation stands for.
Now, what about what we were discussing as an individual, how you can influence others? And Nityananda Ram Prabhu made that comment about how important it is the way we behave. Now, what about as a society? Okay, ISKCON is like a society, a social body. What sort of things can ISKCON as a social body demonstrate to humanity at large, which, if humanity at large followed, would be good for them? Because, as Nityananda Ram Prabhu made the point about the natural mentality of people, is that they don't really know so much or even see bhakti or even care about it. They don't care about the fact that, you know, we chant so many rounds and, you know, we offer out and we have so much devotion when we... And all that humanity at large see about us is our external behavior, how we make our money, how we dress, you know, how our families, you know, what we do with our rubbish, all these sort of... That's what the people in humanity at large see. Now, what sort of things can ISKCON as a social body demonstrate to humanity at large, which, if they picked up and started doing, would be good for them? It's Ananda Seva.
Cooperation among different nationalities.
Very good. Yeah, all these different devotees and they all work together and very good. We'll set a good example for humanity, yeah.
Self-sustaining society where a group of people, they're all farming, their own land.
Eco-friendly living. Is our Prabhupada's philosopher wants us to do. If humanity started doing that, it'd be great for them.
Cow protection,
yeah, very good.
Vegetarian.
Yeah.
Moral value.
Moral values, social, yeah. Take
it on. Harinam
Sankirtan. Yeah, that's transcendental. That's different. I mean,
on an individual level, Prabhupada said that our important principle
is
purity.
Yeah, purity. Yeah, the point of this discussion is that Harinam Sankirtan is not an independent, it's not an isolated event. We do it, but people see everything else that we do. And the way we behave in all the other areas also affects them. That's the whole point of this discussion. So not that we think as long as we do Harinam Sankirtan, it doesn't matter how we behave. It does, in all these ways.
Yeah, I guess it's an extension of moral value, but upholding family units.
So important. People expect to see that these people, their families stay together. I think our percentage is not as good as the Kami's. So, you know, there's many ways we can improve. Other areas, you feel? Yes?
Etiquette.
Behavior, yes. Yeah,
like religious, we worship God.
Yeah.
Sacrifice.
Yeah. I'll see that.
Relationship.
Yeah, relationship.
I don't know how to explain it, but it's a thing with self-sacrifice.
Simple living. As spiritual people, we should actually demonstrate a simple lifestyle, and not that we kind of like overly addicted to gadgets. People expect to see that from us.
Nityananda Ram.
You should be satisfied with your allotment and not, you know, be, oh, we've got to get more, we've got to get more. Nityananda Ram.
The temples are a microcosm of the world. They're very small. And not very many people from society actually come to them. And about 90% of human interaction anymore is at work, where you meet your friends and your co-workers at work. So if you're not dressed like a devotee at work, there's only two things left you can do that Srila Prabhupada said we should do. Wear a sikha, wear your kippa. Otherwise, no one knows you're a devotee. And hardly anyone really comes to the temples around the world, considering the world population at all. So, really, we have to put ourselves in that social environment that we would be in the world. We have to put ourselves in that environment in such a way that we're identifiable as a devotee. Of course, you can't wear a sari many times to work. You can't wear
special device, we can't rest our soul. We can't wear our dhotis at work, so we have to have some identifying thing without violating the terms of the employment. So there has to be something in society one must do to stand out so we can affect society.
Anybody here working? Anyone have a job? Well, do the people tell us your name again?
Riman,
can you tell us in your work environment the people, they know you're a devotee?
No.
They don't?
Because it's hard to... I come from a corporate.
Yeah, right.
We have friends.
Yeah.
But this person is as a bad image.
Yeah.
Because it's due to 30, 35 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
There was some misunderstanding in this country. So it's difficult. So even in France, you should not... why you approach a religious apartment, where you come from? Are you Muslim? Are you Hindu? Are you Christian? It's forbidden, even at work or school.
Yeah, France is a real case, isn't it? The
United States is very open in this way, very open.
Where? UK?
UK.
Yeah.
Very open in this way.
Yeah.
But France is...
France? Like,
no, no.
Big demons in the government there, literally. Yeah, Anthony?
When I worked in UBS, Union Bank of Switzerland, in London, I didn't like have like sheep or anything like that, but through, let's say if they start speaking about food, meat, gossip like that, they'll just know what the facial expressions, we're not so interested in.
Yeah, anyone had experience working and...
Well, I'm retired now.
Yeah,
long time ago I was working with the and I would say I didn't do anything to appear like an author. Yeah. And it created an identity crisis.
Yeah.
But I would say now I would have showed up than I would want to.
You would prefer, in retrospect you feel that you would prefer to show. But did the people, they knew you were devoting or?
Yeah, they knew, but not
no, I'm
yeah, I'm retired now. He's a school teacher.
Yeah.
And nobody, of course I have my MPs on, but nobody knew of the body. And that, I would say that that kind of, it's like my inner life, I keep that for myself, at work, otherwise it may create like a stigmatization or whatever. And, but on the other hand, as far as relationships, and you have to be nice with everybody and be non-judgmental, and the people, they know this guy is okay, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, okay, we'll take another couple of comments on this from Sankar.
My experience with working in London and the city is that everyone would associate the Hare Krishna with the serving street devotees who just do Harinam and really heavy on Sanskrit, and that would isolate them, people coming from corporate background.
Yeah.
So I wasn't outrightly a devotee, but then, say for instance, every Friday people would bring in snacks. So from the Manor Bakery I'll bring in some cakes or something. And then like that, when people would ask and inquire a little more, and then they'll see through your character or whatever that you are spiritually inclined, then it'll be a select few kind of people. Otherwise you could just openly say to Hare Krishna in a big IT firm, people would just like completely switched off.
Of course, in the West, it's a little bit underdeveloped. We need a few more generations to kind of integrate. Other places in the world, I mean, like for example, places like Mumbai, things like Bhaktivedanta Hospital, we're much more upfront, and congregation is so strong, and there are people they know, there's so many congregations are so huge, and the congregations have a big influence on the societies. These big places, Pune and Shalpati, the huge congregations, and people people in general, they expect a high standard of moral behavior and other spiritual principles. They expect to see it in us more than other people, common people. One time I was in the airport in Mumbai in the morning, like 6 minutes before they renovated, and there's always a big jam at the security. You check in, that's fine, but then there's not enough security gates, and everyone's lined up for miles, and everyone's in anxiety because they're going to miss their flight. So I was with another devotee, and we kind of like, we're going to miss the flight, come on,
And I hear this voice behind me, the kind of suit, and he says, Swamiji, you don't understand how a line works? Went through, but what can you say about that? And we were there, Dodi, everything, the whole thing. Common people do it, no one really cares. They see us doing it. The big the sadhus, you know, the followers of Bhaktivedanta Swami. When you do something wrong in India, it'll be in the paper next day. ISKCON followers, ISKCON, ISKCON. We're not just annoying.
They're drinking Limca.
Hey, everybody on the street stream Limca. When a devotee does it, ISKCON followers, ISKCON devotees.
Later we found out it wasn't
as fun
as other
groups,
but still we got
labeled. So in places like India where we have a big, you know, as a society, it's going to have a big influence on the society. And all of these things, you do anything wrong, you know, but everyone will make it. Sanya shira alpa kshidra tava loka dai. A little deviation on the behalf of a sannyasi, everyone will talk about it. Yes, Anthony?
Michael. I'm just thinking about the point about leadership in Bhagavad Gita. I remember reading a Bhagavatam temple where our actions scar Krishna's reputation.
Yeah. Or Guru and Prabhupada, definitely. Another couple of comments and we'll finish up. We'll take Achyuta, Ananda, and then Nityananda Ram and finish on this.
Yeah, actually, I never heard, but I studied law in the temple. I was living in the temple, and I had a hair. Going on the college in time of law, I was thinking I will approach the people in this type, you know, somehow I would like to preach them. And then the devotees told me that I should shave my head and put tilak and put flesh on cloth, and that will be great influence on the people. And in that town, no one is going on the college or any devotees not going to the flesh on cloth. Only this thing, I should have and put my Russian clothes, had a great influence on students. And many of them came to our student program. Many of them approached me and asked me questions. Many questions. Honest.
Without even speaking, just by your behavior, by your dress, they saw that, you know, you had an effect.
And I see that this cloth actually
the influence
to correct me and to correct
you. Yeah,
that's it.
Good.
Listen
on the
round table. Three really quick things. My thing is shorter now because I'm older and involved, but I've worn a sikha for 40 years and I've been in business for 40 years and I wore the sikha solely to make other business people ask me why I had long hair in the back, which gave me the golden opportunity to tell them Hare Krishna. And then they would wonder why I'm lying at lunch and trying to do business with them. And it was always a good attention getter and a conversation starter. And the second thing, a long time ago in a land far, far away, I used to let the Radha Damodar buses park in the big warehouse parking lot, and I'd sit Kamal Krishna on the entire warehouse. I just like opened the back door, and he'd go in, and I'd shut the door, and boy, I'd just go at it for like hours on end with all the employees preaching and preaching, and we made the noise. And the third thing, in Mumbai, there is a business called VAST, which is a business that is run by temple devotees and ex-business people. And VAST sends their team into corporate businesses to teach values to corporate businesses and also bhakti to corporate businesses.
Ananda Mahanabhu is having a
call. Well, it just so happens the CEO is sitting right
here. Jai Ananda Mahanabhu. Values education. Yeah, and as we can understand that as our, particularly the congregations, you know, grow more and more and more, this is going to be more and more a huge field. The way ISKCON devotees behave, the way they make money, the way they do business, their family values, everything is going to have such a huge influence on society. And therefore, you know, the ideal way to act is, of course, the Vanasram Dharma. That's what's there. Even though it's not directly, we just studied in Nectar Devotion, it's not directly going to awaken Prema, but it has a purifying influence on the whole of society. They will progress by imitating the principles of Vanasram Dharma, cleanliness, austerity, whatever, regulation, honesty, simplicity.
And that is our responsibility, to show humanity that standard. And that's the principle that Krishna is explaining to Arjuna here. Yes, we discussed all that. All right, let's have a look at the third chapter. And see what's going on there. So, as Narayan Prabhu mentioned a little earlier, Arjuna gets a little bit confused because he can't understand how, if you do the karma, he's confused. Because Krishna is saying to fight, but he's saying to be spiritual. So Arjuna thinks that being spiritual means stopping the fight. So he's saying equivocal, two things. Say one thing. So that one thing is karma yoga. Act in a spiritual way. We'll touch on this a little more shortly. Already we've touched on it to some degree just now, how, because in general humanity is going to be required to do the karma, so better that everyone sees the example of karma yoga, and there'll be no reaction, and therefore it's better than karma sannyas, which also has no reaction, but people can get confused by it. People don't understand it and they can't follow it. Tomorrow we'll be looking at that. We just discussed this now. And that. And we're going to... Yeah, that also we discussed. And a little later today we're going to be looking at this. And Arjuna asked about lust. We'll discuss that at the end of the session today. So, at the end of the... Okay, at the beginning of the third chapter, Prabhupada makes this comment in the purport. Someone can read, please.
Actually, Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal, but to analyze Bhakti Yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas.
So that's why Krishna spends time explaining them. He could have just said to Arjuna, "Oh, just think of me. Fix your mind on me." When Arjuna was bewildered at the beginning of the second chapter, Karpanya, Arjuna says, "Dharma samudra chaitaha." I'm bewildered about my dharma. Krishna could have said, "Manmana, bhagamad bhakta, maya shakta manapa." He could have said it then, but he didn't. He goes on to explain all this, karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga. Why is that? Because, as Prabhupada comments here, that'll actually help us to understand the depth of bhakti. The depth of bhakti. So we don't take it sentimentally. So Krishna takes time to explain it all. And Prabhupada comments here. Previous chapter means chapter 2. Can you read?
In the previous chapter of the prelude to Bhagavad Gita, many different thoughts were explained, which was always and the last is known. A more organized outline of the path is in an individual action and understanding. In other words, what is expected is sharing the path of Krishna consciousness for all students to seriously learn to understand and view of the Bhagavad Gita.
Okay, by his questions means Arjuna's doubt. He's clearing the path, because Krishna is going to respond to all this in the Gita. Now, Prabhupada says here that a more organized outline of the path would be necessary, okay? Second chapter, we already showed you the diagram, everything was touched upon. Karma Yoga, Karma Kanda, Karma Sannyas, touched on. Now, a more organized path would be necessary, and that's what we see in the subsequent chapters. Right, chapter 3, we'll explain Karma Yoga. Chapter 4, Jnana Yoga. Chapter 5, Karma Sannyas Yoga. And then chapter 6, Jnana Yoga. So that is the more organized path, more organized presentation that Krishna makes. as we mentioned, that chapter 4 and chapter 5 deal predominantly with the behavior of a jnani. The behavior of a jnani. So we won't go into so much detail on those two chapters. The behavior of a jnani, because it's all... can read, let's have a look at a few verses just to give the idea. Why don't you take a look at chapter 4, text 18. Someone start on 18 and read up to about 24, fourth chapter. Just a translation. Yeah, Abhay, read the translation.
Bhava sees in action, and action in inaction, is intelligent among men, and he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities.
Read on.
19. One is understood to be in full knowledge, whose every endeavor is devoid of desire for sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker for whom the reactions of work have been burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge.
Yeah.
20. Abandoning all attachment to the results of his activity, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruitive action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings.
Yeah.
21. Such a man of understanding acts with mind and intelligence perfectly controlled, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions, and acts only for the bare necessities of life.
All right. Now this is what's being described here.
How did I act?
Yeah, what type of action? Who's being described here? Yeah. Or? Okay.
Man of understanding.
An impersonalist. An impersonalist. Acts only for the bare necessities of life. Ever satisfied and independent. Would you say that that's a way to describe a devotee? A devotee?
Well, no, but a devotee, well, that's one thing, you know, a devotee, sometimes he's thinking, oh, well, it's about all this, but how much is he renowned, how much, you know, like,
yeah, okay.
Can be tricky.
Yeah.
You said that's a byproduct of being a devotee.
Yeah, anyway, the question is, would you describe a devotee like this?
No.
A devotee is not satisfied, he always wants to do more for Krishna. A devotee is all prepared to do anything. Here is saying you're not interested in doing anything, only the bare necessities. Does a devotee act only for the bare necessities?
No.
No, it accepts no. Whatever is Krishna, whatever Krishna wants. Is a devotee always independent?
No.
No. He's always dependent. So these chapters are describing an impersonalist. Of course in the purport, Prabhupada talks about bhakti, but it kind of gets a bit, you know, so we won't go into it in so much detail.
Earlier you were speaking about
Atmarasya. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. Alright, now let's take a look at where these three principal yoga processes are explained in detail. As we mentioned, Karma Kanda, not exactly a yoga system, although it's connected. And tomorrow we will look at how Karma Kanda will bring you to Kama Yoga tomorrow. But today we'll clarify just these three processes. What we're looking at, what we want to identify, is the distinction. Okay? These are different yoga, these are different systems, different processes. And what are they? What is Karma Yoga? What is Jnana Yoga? What is Dhyana Yoga? We're going to explore and establish today. Okay? So to do that, We're going to do a little bit of multitasking. We're going to give you a break, and we're going to give you some work to do on the break. Right? But we'll give you plenty of time. So we'll divide you into three groups, okay? Three broad groups. So that can be everybody on the side of Abhay and this side. On the left, on your left wing, why don't you guys do Karma Yoga? Okay? You'll tell me you're the group. And then everybody here from, let's say, Ajit Anand to Narayan, everybody you guys in the middle is Jnana Yoga section. Okay? Jnana Yoga section. And then over the remaining assembled Vaishnavas, you guys, Dhyana Yoga group, okay? So, your exercise is this. This is your exercise. Those sections I'm going to show you again. I'm going to show you again. You read those sections. And then, in your group, okay, group's a little bit big, we have to make it two groups. You divide up, the one big group again divide into half. Okay, so make two, each third of the class again divide into two groups so you can discuss in groups of around four or five. So discuss, first of all you discuss what is the, look at the verses particularly, look at the verses, the Sanskrit and the translation, and actually identify what is the process, what is Karma Yoga, what is Jnana Yoga, what is Dhyana Yoga, and then you can come and demonstrate. In the words of Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, variety is the mother of enjoyment. So today we're going to do a little mime. That's something you haven't done before in the Bhakti Shastri course, a mime. A mime means not allowed to speak. You have to do it all by action. Miming. Okay, so you're gonna mime. So you're gonna mime Karma Yoga. You're gonna mime Jnana Yoga. You're gonna mime Dhyana Yoga. All right. The previous one. Okay, find out what it is, and then mime. Have to show by mime. Okay. We won't have six mimes. We'll have three. So out of each set of two, we'll select one group, okay? Randomly. You have to prepare. And there are the verses. Any question on the exercise?
How do we help them?
Okay. Let's say you take about, this will take about, I think around about 12:20, you should be able to be back here and ready to do the mimes. 12:20. 12:20, okay? So be ready at 12:20 and we'll get straight into the mines. Okay?
Thank you.
finished. Very interesting. Next group.
Thank you.
writing. That who is the, where is the staunch brahmachari who would not succumb to the charms of Rohit? something about devotees that, you know, we try and give a straight, philosophical, simple subject, but devotees can make it so creative. So, what did we learn about karma yoga from the mind? What about those who are not in the karma yoga team? Tell us what we saw in the karma yoga mind that indicates the process of karma yoga.
Gang violence.
Yeah. Can you explain something about karma yoga process with reference to that mind?
We saw that Prabhu was doing, it was in action.
Yeah.
He was sweeping, he was doing something.
Yeah.
So he wasn't just meditating,
okay.
He was in motion.
We saw the karma. Anyone else can identify how it was karma yoga?
Yes.
Hari Purush.
Undisturbed, like you were spoken on that despite all the things going around.
Good, yeah. Well, that was definitely there. Yes?
He was determined in his service.
Okay, yeah. Or his duty.
His duty.
Yeah, duty. Some further elaboration from the karma yoga mind truth. Can you explain to us how the process is being demonstrated?
The verse you gave us indicate how a person when his duty is not attached to success or failure of the duty. So he was trying to demonstrate how Kamala Kantapuri will just carry on with his duty despite being disturbed, but also despite being praised. So he's also praised and helped him be able to carry on.
Okay. Anything else? Good. Okay, let's take a look at that verse. Second chapter. This is probably the second chapter. Yeah, this verse you could say would be the quintessent verse of karma yoga.
I have someone's pen that's left here.
Quintessent verse of karma yoga. Explains it very succinctly. 248. So yoga star means be situated in yoga, and kuru karmani, do your prescribed duties. Yoga star, kuru karmani, and that's done by chakra means abandoning, sangam means attachment to the result. And then siddha sid, that is success or failure. Sama buddhva, sama is sameness. Buddhva, become. Same, become equipoise in success or failure. Sama tvam, the quality of equanimity. Sama tvam, having equanimity. Samatam yoga uchite, that is called yoga. Having equanimity is called, what type of yoga?
Karma yoga.
So key points to remember with karma yoga is that, oh by the way, all of in surrender unto me, or there's quite a lot elaborate discussion of sakam and nishkam karma yoga, but Krishna doesn't actually get into sakam karma yoga. He doesn't actually discuss it. Krishna just discusses complete detachment. That's it. No attachment. Nishkam. So wherever Krishna talks about karma yoga, it's nishkam karma yoga. Complete detachment.
Is that just chapter 3, 4, 5?
Yeah.
Does that change later on?
Well, later on, karma yoga won't be discussed. I mean, it's reviewed in the 18th chapter, but in 7 to 12, a couple of little places, but yeah, same.
So for example, who doesn't call Sakala and Nishkala, karma yoga, that's just kind of his? Right.
No, it's taken from the previous acharya's further elaboration and analysis.
Okay.
In other words, how to get to the it's explaining the path of karma yoga, how you gradually come to nishkam karma. But Krishna's not explaining gradual achievement of nishkam karma. He says immediately, he's saying be completely detached. That's karma yoga. Okay, so our presentation on the Jnana Yoga. So those who weren't in the Jnana Yoga mime troupe, can you tell us what you saw in that presentation that reflects the principles or the process of Jnana Yoga?
That's our group.
Yes, those who are not in your group, tell us what we saw. Oh, another point on the Karma Yoga we forgot to mention is that it has to be Vanashram Dharma. You can't just do any karma, any work. It has to be prescribed work and then karma, and then you do it without attachment to the result. That's karma. Jnana Yoga people, those who are not in, yes?
You can see that first he prescribed when we needed to think about what's right and what's wrong, and then act.
Good, very good. Yeah, it was based, you can say that the detachment was based on analysis, intellectual analysis. Yeah, good, what else did we see? Yep, what else? What was that? What? Yep.
He was?
Okay, yeah, so that's showing the difficulty of Jnana Yoga. That because there's no sensual engagement, then there's opportunity to be engaged improperly. What else? What is the detachment based on?
Knowledge.
Of? Yeah, okay. What was the knowledge of? Which day? Why was he detached? Knowledge?
Difference between matter and spirit.
Yeah, and matter does what?
Matter.
Yeah, that's it. Matter doesn't stay. Matter doesn't remain. Oh, I've got that, yeah, so empirical meaning, actually the word empirical means based on observation. Empirical, in other words, it's by seeing the reality. Gyan means real, Gyan means truth, Gyan means fact, knowledge, Gyan. Again, Jnani means realized, means he knows what's real. So Jnani is reality. So when you see the reality, when you observe the real is the reality rather than the illusion. That is what Prabhupada means by that statement, based on by empirical, predominantly empirical. That means that you are fixed in renunciation based on seeing the reality of the material energy. That's a process. That's a process. And it's cultivated, as we saw, by study of Shastra. But also performing tapasya. In other words, you become jnanavan. You get knowledge. You see the temporary nature. This is the verse. So the sangsparsha means the touching complete. Sangsparsha means the connecting. Sangsparsha means to unite. Krishna Sarupa. Sangsparsha means to make a complete connection.
Touch,
a full touch. The bow, the pleasure that comes from that. When the senses connect to the objects of the senses. Right? That's taste, form, smell, sound, they're called odd sense objects, and the senses are meant to actually connect to those things, right? They become attracted to those.
Well, I didn't understand the old man at the end.
Oh, yeah, we'll come to that. Yeah, that was the young girl that grew old. And our Jnani was doing this, our Jnani was going, See, this is there. What it says in the Shastra is true. I can see it. So that pleasure, he knows that dukkha yoni means the generate the place where miseries are generated. Yoni is the womb. So the dukkha yoni means the place where misery is generated. That misery is generated from the senses coming in contact with their objects. Why is that the source of misery? Because antavanta, it is ending. Antavanta means possessing an end, right? Antavanta means having an end. So that means that you suffer when it goes. So a Buddha, a Jnani, na teishu ramata, he gets no pleasure from the contact of the senses with their objects. Because he knows that pleasure will finish. So Jnani, he sees the young woman, he sees a really old woman. I preached in Bangladesh for a significant period of time, and we were in Dhaka. We used to say in Dhaka about Dhaka. And funny thing about Bangladesh people, they're crazy about FA Cup football. Like a man.
Just specifically the FA Cup?
The one where it's like Chile, Argentina.
Oh, right.
World Cup. They're crazy about it. We go to the most remote region of Bangladesh. No electricity, palm trees, coconut, and they've got like Argentina flag and Chile. It's amazing. So at night time, because the game is on in Europe, so it's like starts at 11 o'clock at night. So we're in Dhaka, and there's millions of people, they're all crammed in our temple thing. And they're watching everybody in Dhaka, the whole of Dhaka is watching the game. So it's like you just hear, like everybody, the televisions and everything. And then it's like, again, you just hear the whole of the city kind of going roaring, at 11 o'clock at night. And then what happens in Bangladesh is that the power cuts. regular, the power cuts, the power's on. Current chilling YouTube, right? So you hear the whole of Dhaka, and they're kind of in unison there. They're, and then they're like black, and boom. Then you hear the whole of Dhaka in a combined wail of pain. Because it went black right in the middle of the game. You hear them wail with pain. Now we were there, we weren't watching it, we're not wailing with pain, right, because we're not watching the game. So the Jnani knows that, it's pain, it's pain in disguise, disguised pain. So therefore he's able to, that's knowledge, that's Jnana, he's able to restrain his tendency to enjoy. That is Jnana Yoga. Right? That's different from our process. And then Dhyana Yoga. What did we see? Dhyana Yoga? Yeah, another comment by Prabhupada. Can read? A lecture. Can read? Someone read?
Dhyana Yoga in Pali is obtained by calculation of higher knowledge by discriminating what is spirit and what is man.
Right? So on the basis of that knowledge, of the reality, that is what connects you, Prabhupada says here, keep in touch with the Supreme. That is what connects you, the strength of your wisdom. That is what connects you to God. That's Jnana Yoga. Doesn't necessarily mean reading books. People always, they think Jnana Yoga or read a lot of books. Doesn't have to be reading books. Or Shastra, it just means have to know the temporary nature of the material energy, and knowing that, realizing that, able to restrain one's interaction with it.
Some devotees or some yogis, they have a process, they sit by the burning hot.
Yeah.
And they just watch the body get burnt after another.
Then they meditate. That helps them develop jnana.
Sometimes I live, my temple is like a university teaching center, that's where I go so I read from this every day, and a lot of students come by and they have all kinds of theories about the reality of what the purpose of life is.
Yeah.
And they mostly come up with it, they haven't really read anything. So sometimes we'll say, like, oh, he's really just a jnani.
Yeah.
But is that having to give him such credit?
It's probably a misuse of the word in the orthodox understanding.
Okay.
No, a jnani doesn't mean a person who thinks a lot or a person who reads a lot of books. That's not a jnani. A jnani means a person who can see the temporary nature of the material energy. That's reality. They see the reality, and based on that realization, they're able to disentangle themselves from material interaction. That's a jnani. The term we should use is a speculator. Okay, so that's jnana. And then dhyana yoga, pretty straightforward, meditating on the super soul on the heart, meditating on the presence of the super soul in the heart. And paramatma darshan in the heart. And sixth chapter describes the methods by which
you are able to, you know, perceive the super soul, and by breath control, by mind control, pratyahara, samadhi, etc., etc. The whole process described in the sixth chapter.
Any question on the three respective yoga processes?
Well, what you meant to know, what do you mean that jnana and karma depend on what?
Let's talk about that later in the week, bhakti. Let's talk about that later in the week. Because at this stage, Krishna, he doesn't present like that so much in the Gita. There's no mention of bhakti here. Ultimately, yeah, of course, Brahmayam Sabhabhutani, okay, Krishna's directing everything, and he's making the processes available, so ultimately it's all his mercy, so ultimately you need mercy of God. So you could say like that. No.
In the fourth chapter, there's the first thing is Vibharaka Vayakaroda at 4:10.
Yeah.
And it's actually the word bhava is there, you know. And it says that he can refuse to meet many persons in the past, being purified by knowledge, and does they all attain transcendental love for him.
Yeah.
And the word is bhava.
Yeah.
It was like, on the
yeah, it's kind of inserted in there. Mm-hmm. You could say that, you know, the ultimate jnana avan mam prapadyante, Krishna will say later in the 7th chapter that ultimately you get jnana, it's conducive to bhakti in the end.
So are we making these compartments just for the sake of studying?
Yeah. It's a little bit like, okay, you've got an engine and it operates, it all works together and operates. But for the purpose of maintenance, sometimes you need to pull it apart and see how the different things work. Although it doesn't operate like that. It operates when you put it back together. So we'll see tomorrow how these things connect together and ultimately connect to bhakti. But for the time being, we're just looking at the distinction between the way they function, or the processes, because they are distinct processes. They're different approaches.
Sometimes the breakdown of the Bhagavad Gita is like the first few chapters of Kama Yoga, and then the next six Bhakti Yoga, and the next last six Jnana Yoga. Is that a little bit reductive?
A little bit what?
Reductive, like reductionist or something?
Could be. I mean, Prabhupada gives those categories. One thing that you can say on that, Jnana Yoga, I'll let you discuss that when you get to that section. But one thing that you could say that ultimately that we showed that process, which we'll discuss tomorrow, the yoga ladder. So you go from Kama Kanda, Kama Yoga, Jnana Yoga. So ultimately that, you know, if you become a Kama Yogi, you're meant to become a Jnana Yogi. They're connected. They're almost inseparable. You progress. And tomorrow we'll look at that. So therefore you can say that this whole section is about Kama Yoga, because it's the general path. By practicing, so tomorrow we'll be looking at how by practicing Kama Yoga, jnana develops more. And eventually you mature into a jnani. So therefore you can say it's the path of karma. Yoga.
Prabhu just mentioned that jnani is one who knows the difference between matter and spirit, not the one who
read any book.
No, I said that it doesn't necessarily mean that one who reads books. It may read books, but it doesn't mean that it has to read books, or that everyone who reads books is a gyani, or
so
that every.
In that case, yeah, doesn't read books, then you better be acknowledged.
Like Ekalabhya Prabhu gave the example by observing. Either they go and they sit in Varanasi at the burning ghat, and they sit and they see all the funeral, all the bodies coming every day. They see that, and that gives them gyan. So by association. I mean, the principle is association. Tada e bhava sindu, sulava manava janava, sat sange, tada ho e bhava sindu re. Sat sange, you have to associate with the spiritual somehow or other. So the Shastra gives us that association through instruction, upadesh. But by other, you can get association by sadhu. So they live with the sadhus, they associate, they get, they understand, they see it like that. Simply by seeing alone, you say, won't produce jnana. Because all the materialists see all the time, they never get jnana. But somehow you have to get satsanga and seeing, and then you can see.
Seems like there's an element of vijnana, of realization within the jnana. Jnana is incomplete if it doesn't have vijnana.
Yeah.
If someone is not experiencing vijnana or realization, then they're not actually practicing jnana yoga.
Yeah. Yeah, jnana, because vijnana means different things. Can mean jnana yoga, can also mean applied jnana. Yes, Michael?
Somebody who practices seeing the difference between matter and spirit,
yeah,
are they not dry speculation?
Sometimes we may call that dry speculation also, because they're not doing anything positive. We usually say the jnanis are dry because, and we will discuss this in the lesson 3 of this section, why bhakti is more, because it's not dry, but it includes jnana. So when you just say it's all temporary, therefore I won't do anything, that's kind of, it's negative and dry. It's dried out. So yeah, dry. It's dry. You can call it dry speculation, yeah?
In the ultimate verse of the 4th chapter, 434, the jnana is the word, jnana is there, the jnani is the spiritual master, jnani na sattva-dashana. So, that indicates that spiritual master is the jnani.
Yeah, of course. It has to be jnani.
I mean, you know,
yeah, that's the... Jnana is not from Maya. Jnana is there. That's what Krishna is saying. Jnana man. Become a jnani. Nahi jnana na sadrishin pavitram. There's nothing as sublime as jnana, Krishna says. But we'll discuss later how bhakti includes jnana. So, you know, it's not that we're ajnana.
Yeah, but sometimes we have to speak of jnana or jnani in a very derogatory way.
Anyway.
Like that.
Yeah, so we have to understand. Let's do this. Let me ask you, here we have many experienced preachers for a few minutes before winding up today. Let me ask you, the different yoga processes that were mined and explained, can you see these principles reflected in different approaches to spiritual life that we interact with in our preaching? Which way do you give examples of how they're reflected in different processes, different approaches?
You mean in the people?
In different spiritual groups and different approaches, how these principles are reflected.
In our preaching?
Just in the we preach, or in your experience of different approaches to spiritual life that are being practiced in the world today. Michael?
Could you say that? If you prepare slideshows, that's common.
No, I'm asking the question is, okay, different groups, outside of our practice of Krishna consciousness, there's other people endeavouring for spiritual life. So, the processes that they follow, how do they reflect the principles that we saw today in these three yoga systems? Yes,
like for instance, at the campus I met in South Africa, there's a Scientology centre just outside of campus, and they're very much focused on understanding what matter is, what's good, and
how chemicals evolve into complex life forms and so on. So they're trying to speculate in some way, some form of a artificial reality.
Okay, fine. Scientologist people are trying to, by observation, understand what's the eternal reality. Ajita Ananda,
you can see the very different groups of people to whom we are preaching. So probably we should preach to students, we should preach Jnana Yoga or to...
Well, I'm just asking, for example, that of things that they're doing.
The Liberation Army is people who have political and...
Yeah, so what would you call that? Like Salvation Army? Salvation Army, yeah. So what process would they be doing, Salvation Army?
Karma Yoga.
Karma Yoga, yeah. By works, by helping others, by caring, by helping others, they're trying to, you know, to realize God.
Yeah. By preaching, like, we have a... Would this also have a preaching table and all that? Seems to be very much similar, like silence, purity, but there won't be any much of a conclusionary conflict.
So what category, or what process of the three that we were looking at, would the Buddhists be?
Yeah,
everything is temporary, everything is illusory. Yeah, it's a fact.
That's right. Yes, at least America,
there's the current thought, like they call that voluntary simplicity. You know, like, what's the use of having like 4 credit cards or 10?
But based on, what would you say that based on? What process?
Based on that, like some sort of detachment and just fairness.
Which yoga system?
It would be like
Yan. Why have unnecessarily more than you need, because it's all, you're going to lose it anyway, so have less. That's Yan.
Would you say that modern Christianity that focuses on the Holy Spirit
like
a type of dhyana?
Well, there also can be mixes. So what would you say about modern Christianity?
They focus on sort of like the God essence within it.
Yeah, there's some, not just modern, I mean traditional Christianity, Catholicism. They have the pictures, and there's the picture of, I think Jesus, and in the heart, there's the heart opens up, you see that? That's Dhyana Yoga. In other words, there's some like the heart, and there's Jesus in the heart, or Mary in the heart, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that means meditation on the heart. That's Dhyana Yoga. Sacred heart. Yeah. What else do they do in Christianity? Is it just Dhyana Yoga? They just meditate on Mary in the heart?
Charity.
So there's that mix. It's a mix. Mix. What would you, Christianity, you'd say would be a mix of what?
And love.
How much Gyan is there in Christianity? Yeah, a bit of Karma Kanda in Christianity also, because a lot of times it's give us this day our daily bread.
Oh, but then in Christianity there's this notion of temporary also, you know.
Probably not as strong as others like Buddhists, because like in Christianity they bury the body, they put it in the box and everything, and they really think that, you know, you identify eternally with your body.
Yeah.
Huh? And that you'll be resurrected on the day. And it's kind of like a lot of, you know, again there, mixed in.
Yeah.
But definitely,
Or even the notion of, let the soul rest in peace, what does that mean? That doesn't make sense. So, active by nature, so, rest in peace.
Yeah. It's an underarm.
The mega churches of the world, especially in the United States, coming out of the Willow Creek Christian Church and Willow Creek Chicago, has a confederation of about 500 churches worldwide. They also have satellite link up to all 500 churches. They have pretty much stripped out the hardcore preaching. It's rare to see a picture of Jesus in the temple. On Sunday, they'll start out with Christian music, mostly rock and roll Christian music. They'll have 2 or 3 sections of rock and roll Christian music. They might even get up and dance during the course of Christian music and throw a few beach balls into the crowd so they can pass them around. The preacher, who is very skilled at congregational building, and remember these are people that can draw 6 Sunday sermons for a total of 25,000 to 35,000 people on Sunday alone. And then they'll rent the Coliseum at Christmas and draw in 25,000 10 times. They'll draw in a quarter million. The preacher will get up, he'll be very skilled. They'll probably be wearing a Rolex. He'll probably be wearing designer clothes, and he's a very successful businessman outside of the church, and he will give a community lesson on values and treating people fairly. But you will not see much Bible preaching, because it has not worked effectively to draw people into large congregations. Now, these 500 churches worldwide, I'm very familiar with Willow Creek. I've been to the Bayside Church many times to observe this phenomenon over and over again. These are money-making organizations with large paid staffs, and they are not geared around the old-style Christianity that I was baptized into as a child. They're geared around survival and finances. So what sort of...
Very interesting. Tell us, how would you evaluate it in terms of the yoga system? While you were talking about them, they preach about moral values and community building.
Even at Christmas, when they could give a pretty strong sermon, they'll give a family values sermon on how to be good with your family, and not delve at all into anything that we might think that would be traditional.
Oh, what would you call it then? What level is it on?
On a couple different levels. I'm trying to think of how to classify.
Well, the motivation is what? In other words,
the motivation is financial.
Yes, but then that's
financial.
What would we call it?
Karma.
At best.
Yeah,
you do it and be happy in this world.
Yeah.
I mean, are there any concepts of transcendence at all?
And these are the future Christian churches in North America. Truly.
So actually, we can analyze any type of religious or spiritual approach that you can possibly manufacture or come up with or whatever. You can link it to one or other of these processes, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, or Dhyana Yoga, because there is nothing else you can do. It's either one or another, or it's a mixture. You know, like the yoga ashrams, you go there and they'll do a little bit of meditation, and then they'll have some class on Bhagavad Gita, and then they'll do some Karma Yoga, go and clean the garden. They're kind of like, we'll just do a bit of everything. Mix it all together. Because that is it. There is nothing else that you can either everything's temporary, or either some meditation process, or either by your works. So this is useful to understand these yoga systems. Is useful for us because we can recognize the elements in the different approaches that people have, and we can begin to reel them in on the basis of Gita Padesh. Because we can, in the beginning, we can tell them, actually, this is the proper way to do what you're trying to do. Because Krishna is giving the complete process. And then, as we'll discuss tomorrow, we'll see how all of these processes actually lead a person ultimately to bhakti. So understanding this, we're able to recognize what the level that people are at and recognize how to bring them step to step to the practice. And we'll be looking at that more tomorrow and the next day. Okay?
Hari
Bol. Hari Bol. Hari Hari. Okay, here's a little comment from Prabhupada to complete today's presentation with. Someone like to read, please?
This natural transcendental pleasure is the ultimate goal of yoga and is easily achieved by execution of devotional service or bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga will be vividly described in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita.
Thank
you. Ato Krishna Prabhu ki
jai. Hare
Krishna Prabhu.